You're listening to Cinema Jaw, the greatest movies podcast ever, recorded on location at the Original Mother's Nightclub in Chicago. My name is Matt Kay, and with me is...
Rye, the movie guy, and this week on Cinema Jaw, Matt, we get down with the shit as we take a look at our top five favorite profane movies.
You know, I'm glad you came with it right away, because we usually don't curse on Cinema Jaw, but this is a special episode, so I say, fuck it.
Wow. Two right out the bat. I like it. Profane, vulgar movies. Stuff that when they came out, they were sort of shocking. There was so much swearing or just scenes that really pushed the envelope.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and you can kind of interpret this a bunch of different ways, like movies that just kind of are, in the face of society, or you can stick with language, kind of what I did. And we're going to go around the horn and find out the best profane movies of all time.
And we're doing this, too, because we have a special guest who's going to be joining us. She was on episode 74. She joined us once before.
Yeah,
Nicole Knepper. She goes by the Queen of Cussin from the blog Moms Who Drink and Swear.
Yeah, oh, very exciting.
Absolutely.
There's no better expert in profanity than Nicole.
I know. I can't wait. She has a new book coming out we're going to talk to her about. And she brought her friend Sal along, too. He's got his top five list. He knows movies, especially profane movies.
Yeah, this is one of my favorite genres. I'm so glad we're covering this. Seriously.
In addition to that, we have a theater review of Gangster Squad.
Yeah, that's right.
I have a DVD review of Game Change. Plus, we go eye for an eye on Bullet to the Head, the new Sylvester Stallone movie. And in honor of Jodie Foster's epic Golden Globe speech for the Lifetime Achievement Award, we are playing Jodie Foster movie trivia. We play trivia every week on Cinema Jaw, Matt, and this week you are taking on Nicole.
Yeah, and Sal, so it's two against one.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
A lot of competition.
The pressure is getting to me.
We're also doing a Cinema War this week. This is where me and you battle on a topic each week, and Nicole and Sal are going to judge us on that, and that's looking at Stallone and Arnold, so...
Ooh, okay, cool.
Jam-packed episode, Matt. So our guest, Nicole Knepper, is a featured blogger on the Chicago Tribune site, Chicago Now. Her blog, Moms Who Drink and Swear, is one of the most popular on the site, and her Facebook page has over 240,000 fans. This April, her book, titled Moms Who Drink and Swear, True Tales of Loving My Kids While Losing My Mind, hits the bookshelves. Nicole Knepper, welcome back to Cinema Jaw.
Thank you for having me again.
Last time you were here, we talked a lot about moms in movies. This time we're talking profanity. And it's because of the blog you write, Moms Who Drink and Swear, you've become known for having sort of a potty mouth in your blog.
I have. I'm not even sure how I feel about that, but it's true.
Well, you chose the name, right? I mean, this is something that came out of your head.
I did, but in my defense, it was one of those, but before when I was here, I explained I started the group just for my friends, and everything kind of came out of that. So I think if I had started a blog, I don't know that I would have named it that. No regrets, but I can't say I would do the same thing, if that makes any sense. I would still be swearing.
Which and is drinking? Good.
Definitely, yeah. Drinking, okay. Yes.
Just had to make sure.
Now, the exciting news, obviously, is this book. Your first book, I believe, Moms Who Drink and Swear, True Tales of Loving My Kids While Losing My Mind, is coming out in April. Tell us a little bit about this. When did you get the idea of writing a book?
It's coming out April 2nd. I didn't really get an idea of writing a book, actually. I was writing a blog, and it's kind of, I don't know if kismet's the right word, being in the right place at the right time, I was asked to submit a story for an anthology, which is, a collection of stories, like a chicken soup for the soul. But it wasn't a chicken soup for the soul. It was actually an anthology about sex and stories about sex and sexuality. And so I submitted this story. And unfortunately, because the publishing industry has changed so much, the anthology wasn't taken, but the agent picked up my work and gave me
a
call.
Get out. Really? That's awesome. So yeah. A project that didn't come through.
But actually it has now. They did self-publish through Amazon, and it's great. 50 Shades of Funny. Hookups, breakups, and crackups is what it's called. So it did come through, just not the way it was originally intended to.
Now, are you self-publishing your upcoming book, or you have a publisher
my publisher is Penguin Books, and it's through their New American Library.
That's awesome.
It's exciting.
It's living the dream.
I'm excited.
So this is going to be available as ebook and also be able to buy a physical copy in the bookstores?
Yes, you get a hard copy of the book. I said hard. And Kindle and on Nook. And I will be doing the audio recording myself for the audiobook.
What's the general synopsis? I mean, obviously, Moms Who Drink and Swear. And the whole kids thing, but give it to us in a nutshell.
The title is True Tales of Loving My Kids While Losing My Mind, and it's basically a collection of humorous essays about how who you are shapes the type of parent you are, how you become who you are with your parenting and your stories, and how that shapes you, and also what you need in order to survive the craziness. It's really, I think anyone who's a parent knows, you're trying to survive a lot of the time because it's so difficult. It's so much more difficult than you think it would be.
Yes. Yes. I know. I have a 5-year-old. It's yes. Nuts.
And you're not complaining. You're just saying it's harder than you could ever imagine.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's, you know, their children are great, but they're also like little psychopaths that you have to try to reel in. So
they're trouble.
I'm with you.
Now, are some of the stories that showed up in the blog on Chicago Now part of the book, or are these fresh stories, Nicole?
The majority of the book, I would say 80% of the book, more than 80% actually, is new material. So just like you would, any type of book that you see, I don't know if you've ever seen Bossy Pants, Tina Fey's book,
sure.
Bossy Pants.
I haven't read it, but familiar.
Or Chelsea Handler's book. They're humorous essays, and they go through, mine are humorous essays too, but they're in categories. There's different categories, like girlfriends, family baggage, those types of things, just kids.
And it makes me wonder, too. I was reading some of your columns, as I always do. And for instance, today, Nicole wrote a hilarious post on how she loves dark chocolate and that she has to hide the dark chocolate from her kids because there's nothing worse than when you think you have dark chocolate in the house and you do not. There was another one a little bit more serious about depression a couple of days ago that I really appreciated reading through. And I thought, wow, how does she come up with the topics that you pick? On something like dark chocolate seems so sort of like easy and simple, but yet the way you write about it is so humorous. But at first it's like, well, of course, you know, wouldn't you hate it if your kid ate your dark chocolate?
I don't have to wonder. Yes, I do hate it when he eats my dark chocolate.
So how do you come up with those topics, Nicole?
I think it's a writer thing. You just think of something and you write. I think there's something to be said for the correlation between madness and creativity. And it's sort of that crazy part of me that's creative and mad that just goes with it. And I think to me, it's a fearlessness too. Like if I think of something and it works, boom, it works. I just do it. Like the other day, the depression blog you were talking mm-hmm. about, I likened depression to skinny jeans. And I don't know if that makes a lot of sense to people, but it's true. Not everybody wears skinny jeans the same way. And some people wear depression and you wouldn't know. And others wear it terribly, like camel toe, awful, bad, don't wear it. You know, they're horrible.
Right.
And I think like a blog like that, I was excited to write it. I threw it out there. And I don't really think I'm going to get negative feedback, even though I do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think, what I do is I don't think about the feedback. I just write it and I put it out there, see what happens.
It's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. And it's fearless, like you said. I love it.
And with this book coming out, what's next from there? I mean, is there a possibility maybe that this book could be turned into like a movie or a sitcom, Nicole?
There is. There's
whoa, whoa,
some
whoa.
Talk.
Little talk?
There's a little talk.
This is exciting.
Anything you can drop or is it all very hush-hush?
I just do what I'm told.
We want the scoops, Nicole. Come on. We're trying to get the scoops.
There's some chatter and there's some conversation, but right now it's in that place where, you know, the book is public knowledge, get on Publishers Weekly, yeah. You can look everything up, but
non-disclosure agreements.
Nothing's too firm yet, but
that's really exciting.
It totally is. Last time Nicole was here, she gave secrets away, like how she has a desire to put cheese out of the can. What do you call that?
It's spray
easy cheese.
Spray cheese. All over Liam Neeson's body. Oh. So I'm sure Nicole's going to give us another tidbit later on in the show.
I might.
I got that mental image in my mind now.
Now, Nicole, there are some jawheads, I'm sure, that don't follow you online. Where's the best place for jawheads that don't know about you to catch you online and read some of your awesome blogs?
My blogs can be found on the Chicago Now website, which is the blog site for the Chicago Tribune Media Group. So the collection of bloggers, you can find anything you can think of there. Food bloggers, sports bloggers, real estate, law, parenting, humor, movies.
Mm-hmm.
So Chicago Now has a great blog site. And I also have a page on Facebook that supports my blog. And I, even on the days I don't blog, I try to post there. I do a lot of sharing of other bloggers, whether they're parenting bloggers or just humor writers, information. I try really hard to disseminate as much information as I can in a palatable way you know, for readers so they can laugh but also learn.
And that's also Moms Who Drink and Swear on Facebook.
It is. And I don't know anyone who's not on Facebook. Oh, yes, I do. I know one person who's not on Facebook.
And what about Twitter? Are you on Twitter? Somewhere they can follow you on Twitter?
I am. Queen of Cussin on Twitter.
Nice. And you brought a friend. We got to introduce Sal.
This is my friend Sal.
Sal, welcome to CinemaJaw.
Hello. Thank you.
Sal and I went to junior high together, went to high school together. We reconnected partially through Facebook, but through a friend who's an author.
Indeed.
Indeed. Chris Mandius. He wrote a great book. Yeah.
Well, it's good stuff. Chris is a friend of ours, and he wrote a book called Spoonful, and he self-published it, and it's really good. It deserves an audience.
It is. And if anyone were to specifically option this book for a screenplay, I'm telling you, the very beginning of this book would suck you in, and the movie would just
take
roll.
Off from
it's,
there, yeah.
It's really that good. It's so good. Somebody should do this. Hint, hint.
You know,
Hollywood listens to us on a regular basis.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, like, we just kind of like mention something offhand.
Yeah, that Spielberg should do a movie about Lincoln.
Boom.
Yeah,
it's
next
a movie.
Thing you know.
It's coming out the next year. So
that's you guys are behind that.
Yes, you know, you're welcome, and we're sorry at the same time.
I knew it.
Now, Sal, have you ever been the subject of one of Nicole's blogs?
No, not as far as I know.
You
not as
will
far
be.
As he knows.
To quote Yoda.
It would be flattering, though.
Maybe you will be after this.
Cool. I think I'm basically here in the role of a profanity consultant.
Yes.
He's my wingman.
He is an expert when it comes to profanity in movies.
Good.
I love it. Now, they each have their top five lists, as do me and Matt. But before we get there, two things. One, we want to mention that we are giving a movie away from our sponsor, MoviePass.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what? Let me tell you a little bit about MoviePass, Ryan.
And the Jawheads at home, because it's an excellent service.
It is. MoviePass is a membership service that enables film enthusiasts across the country to attend unlimited movies for a nominal fixed monthly fee.
Tell me more. I believe it's as low as $30 a month.
I know, it is. And dude, nationwide theater coverage. So most theaters, in fact, support MoviePass. All you got to do is check into the theater on your smartphone and swipe your MoviePass card at the kiosk. Boom. It's that simple. And CinemaJaw fans can save $15 off a membership. Go to MoviePass/CinemaJaw. Put in the offer code CinemaJaw at the time, you know, when you check out, and save $15.
Yeah, and we also have a link at our site, CinemaJaw. You'll see it in the top right corner.
Yep.
To MoviePass. Definitely check them out. Unlimited movies in the theater. MoviePass gave us a Movie 2 giveaway. So, Jawheads, if you're listening to this, we are giving away a DVD of Up in the Air, George Clooney. I know, Nicole, you're a big fan of George Clooney.
Yes.
Who isn't, though?
So all you got to do to enter, too, is shoot us a tweet at CinemaJaw. Say, hey, at CinemaJaw, I'm a Jawhead. The first five people in will be entered into a raffle to win Up in the Air, and we'll mail out the movie.
Oh, and Nicole, you wanted to sweeten the pot, right?
I did. And if people also, the first two people that I see that, and they also reference Queen of Cussin in that after this podcast, first two people I see will get a copy of my book.
I love it. Really? Yes.
This is awesome.
Added value.
Yes. So shoot us a tweet at CinemaJaw, at Queen of Cussin, and you can win Nicole's book and also a copy of Up in the Air. Thank you, Nicole. Thank you, MoviePass. It brings us to Eye for an Eye, Interested or Ignore on a new movie in theaters, Bullet to the Head. After watching their respective partners die, a cop and a hitman form an alliance in order to bring down their common enemy. The film stars Sylvester Stallone, Jason Momoa, and Christian Slater. The film is directed by Walter Hill, who directed the cult classic The Warriors, not to mention 48 Hours and Red Heat.
Jeez.
Matt, interested or ignore on Bullet to the Head?
Well, I happened to catch the trailer to this before Gangster Squad last night, and Stallone is just grunting. He doesn't even speak anymore. It's true. I mean, I can understand him. But, you know, with that director, that actually kind of changes my mind a little. I was set to say ignore, but I'll have to go interested.
Nicole, interested or ignore on Bullet to the Head?
It's Stallone. I have to see it.
Wow, fair. I didn't see it going this way. Sal, interested or ignore to Bullet to the Head?
I definitely have to say ignore. I thought the existence of Vin Diesel made Sylvester Stallone completely superfluous.
Oh, that was good. See?
Yeah. Matt, I love that you picked up that all he's doing is grunting at his old age. And two, he's too old to play this big action hero anymore. I just don't buy it.
That's the tagline on the movie poster. It says like something like crime doesn't get old or something. Some words that, let's throw it in the jaw box. What's the tagline in that film?
All right, throw that in the jaw box. Yeah. And here's the other thing, too. You take away some of Stallone's, and this might go against me in a later argument, but you take away Rocky, you take away Rambo, his later films. Do I want to see this? Absolutely not. I'm ignoring. Two ignores, two interesteds for bullet to the head.
I'm not that interested in the movie as much as I just watch things with Sylvester Stallone.
You're just attracted to Sylvester Stallone on screen.
Hey, nobody's ever gotten more out of less syllables.
I agree.
Have to just like give it to him for efficiency.
There's something about him that keeps us coming back. I mean, he's had some really good roles, and I disagree, Ry. I think there's been more than just Rocky and Rambo. He's had some other good ones, but they are few and far between.
Yeah. I think the line of demarcation is with Rocky and everything else. Rocky is basically a street picture. It's about this guy from South Philly. It's just the extreme long shot, and everything else is just, it's not really acting, is it?
No. Right. Yeah, that one kind of came naturally for him.
I agree. Well, two interesteds, two ignores for Bullet to the Head. Matt, you did get out to the theater and you saw Gangster Squad. Tell us about it.
All right, so here's my take on Gangster Squad. And I think I tweeted that it was better than my expectations, but my expectations were exceedingly low. So the best thing going for this film are the amazing set design, capturing the highly stylized Art Deco late 40s LA. The cast is amazing, but sadly underused. And there's some fantastic action pieces in this. Absolutely amazing car chase, which you have to see. Sean Penn, I think, is the highlight of this movie. He puts on a truly menacing performance as Mickey Cohen. I loved it. I mean, seriously, if he wasn't hampered by this crappy script, I mean, that's really the main problem here. What's his name? Will Ball and Paul Lieberman. Their script is just poorly written. The love story's crap. The characters are one-dimensional. They're flat. Emma Stone is pretty much just a paycheck in this film. And the dialogue, man, whoo, it sucks. Yeah. But I did have fun at it, I gotta say. I mean, it was Sean Penn that made me have that fun. I like Josh Brolin, too. And, Ryan Gosling, as much as I really was wishing that he was his character from Drive and didn't talk, that aside, I still can't help but like Ryan Gosling, even though he's a complete idiot in this movie. There's some high points, but really, I think you can skip this one unless you've seen everything else. There's nothing in the theater.
How many Jaws?
Giving it two.
Two Jaws.
Two Jaws. Safe to skip, but not a total waste of time.
Gotcha. And was there a big scene where there was a shootout in a movie theater?
They cut that scene.
Oh, they did cut it.
Yeah.
Because that was originally why it was delayed after the shooting.
Yeah, so they completely removed... Yeah, after the Aurora shooting, they held back the movie from being released. And they reshot that scene to take place outdoors in a Chinatown setting. You can kind of tell that that's a reshoot. It doesn't kind of fit in with the rest of the movie. It was a little jarring.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of problems with the movie. That is the least of them.
Wow. Two Jaws for Gangster Squad.
Visually, it's great. The acting is good. The script sucks terribly. So.
All right. And speaking of new movies, this was one that I just threw out to Sal and Nicole and yourself before we started recording. Lance Armstrong is big time in the news, and it's sort of a new segment we call Jaw Casting. If they make the movie Lance Armstrong, a biopic, who would you cast as Lance Armstrong? We also threw this out to the Jawheads on Twitter. Nicole, do you got one that jumps out at your head? What actor would play Lance Armstrong?
I'm going with Brian Austin Green because he's out of work.
Brian Austin Green?
Yes. His show, Wedding Band, just got canceled.
Oh, poor guy.
So I'm thinking he's got a great body. Lance Armstrong isn't very interesting.
Well, other than the fact that he won like 15 Tour de France.
Doesn't make him interesting to me at all.
He's kind of a parking meter, isn't he?
He is. Characterologically, he's not that interesting. I mean, he's not interesting.
He triumphed over testicular cancer. This doesn't inspire you? None of that?
Nope.
No, okay.
Sal, you got an actor in mind that you would cast in your Lance Armstrong movie?
Like I said, he's kind of a barking meter. I don't find him all that interesting. Not much depth and breadth there. So I thought of the most banal actor I can think of that's also phenotypically correct. So I'm going to go with Ryan Reynolds.
I like that pick. Yeah, actually,
that's good.
That's really good. I think that one-ups mine because I thought I had knocked it out of the park. I went with Scream actor Matthew Lillard.
Oh, that's actually a really good pick.
I like that one better than
Ryan. Yeah, I don't know. I like Ryan Reynolds as well, but Matthew Lillard really looks like him. I thought looks like Lance.
Yeah, and Lillard might be getting a little too. Is he a little too old to play?
He's getting a little too puffy, I think.
Yeah. Well, you know what? He was in The Descendants with George Clooney. He was the one that was cheating with the wife, and he comes off as that sort of Weasley guy that I think of when I think of Lance Armstrong. Now, anyways, especially now that I know he's a cheater.
And all those little yellow bracelets that he sold, it's just like, yeah, kind of leaves a bad taste.
You got an actor that jumps out to you?
Yeah, so, by the way, I kind of agree that he is a parking meter, as you put it, Sal. But I think, what about Ashton Kutcher? You know, he's kind of got the fitness going for it. If you shave his head, give him a
Matt
haircut.
Matt has a fetish with Ashton Kutcher.
No, hey,
yeah, you like him.
We talked about him last
Did
time.
We?
We talked about No Strings Attached.
Yeah, he loves Ashton Kutcher.
That's just a coincidence, guys.
It's empty vessels for 200.
I don't know that it is. Well, but you know what? Not that there is anything wrong with that.
There's nothing wrong with it.
At all.
None of us thought he could pull off Steve Jobs, but by all accounts, he's...
he can't. Do we have verification that that actually happened?
Yeah. Wait until
it actually happened.
Yeah, wait until we actually see how bad of a performance it is. Right.
He looks good in the photos.
All right, we threw this out to the Jawheads on Twitter. We get any responses?
Sure. Michelson said, Jack Black.
Oh, I don't know about that.
At Michelson.
Casting
on Twitter,
against phenotype.
Michelson was thinking of Yo Gabba Gabba, the episode where he told everyone not to bite their friends.
Yeah.
But that would be... Only a parent would know that.
I love Yo Gabba Gabba.
Oh, my God.
So great.
Don't even. Yes.
Dan Fields, who is at DLF The Critic on Twitter, says, Christopher Reeve in 1982, sadly.
Yeah. I mean, I'll Christopher Reeve back in the day? I could see that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That kind of
works. Too handsome.
Too tall.
He was a tall guy.
He's like 6'4", 6'5".
Yeah, but I think Lance has got to be pretty tall also.
Lance
I would imagine being a bicyclist.
Weird face.
Those guys are like... 5'9", 5'10", 5'11". I don't think they're too much taller. Huh.
All right. Ryan B., who is at The Chew Defense on Twitter, said, watching some of the interview last night, Daniel Day-Lewis, the way he looks now.
That'd be a waste of talent from Daniel Day. Don't even attempt this.
Yeah, you're probably right.
And one more we had. Rose Alexander chimed in via Facebook. John Malkovich. Do we got a John Malkovich? I don't know.
I mean, he's got the look, but he's probably
too old.
Yeah, I agree.
Way out of his age range.
You can't see Malkovich bicycling, can you?
No.
No way. No. if we missed one of them, Jawheads, shoot us a tweet, at CinemaJaw, and let us know who you would cast as Lance Armstrong.
How about Rye the Movie Guy?
No, I'm way too short.
Yeah, well, you know, it's the magic of editing. Look at what they did for Tom Cruise.
You don't want to see a guy that needs blocks on his feet to touch the pedals. You know what I mean? It just takes away from the movie.
Yeah, like I said, movie magic.
I don't know how profane a movie would be about Lance Armstrong, but that is our topic this week. The top five most profane, vulgar movies in movie history.
Yeah, and again, we're going to swear here, folks. So
if
you're easily offended, f*** you.
Nicole, you're getting us started this week. You're getting us out of the gate. What do you got sitting at number five?
Okay, I'm starting with Ted.
Just came out. I like the pick.
Is that a shit? Do you remember that?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
We play it on CinemaJaw all the time. We play that clip. We've done it in at least two episodes.
Okay. My husband came in one night. He was looking bad. I said, what's up? Bad day? He said, really bad. I said, me too. Let's get the kids to bed and watch a movie. So we got Ted. And neither of us could stop laughing and crying. We were alternating between because it was wrong in every way. It just blasphemes teddy bears. Like if teddy bears are a thing of worship for children, it wrecks it. It wrecks everything there is that is pure and magical and comforting about a teddy bear.
Yes. And there's something so beautiful though at the same time to see a teddy bear take a hit from a bong. I mean, that was just gorgeous.
Yeah, it's cool that the teddy bear grew up with him, you know, but at the same time is sort of arrested development in his adolescence. It was brilliant.
It's a classic brilliant. Already, Nicole. It's already a classic.
Can I tell you my favorite line from Ted?
Please do.
He says, I tongue punch her fart box.
That's awesome.
Oh, boy.
And there's so many great
so
sight gags.
Wrong.
Great pick. Got to start it great. Thank you, Nicole. We throw it over to Sal. What do you got sitting at number five?
Okay, number five, I have South Park, Longer, Harder, and Uncut. And I think my thing here with profanity, sort of like what I'm looking at is a measuring stick is profaning of the sacred. And you have, like, right off the bat, you have, like, a wholesome little song that starts it out, and then everybody's waiting for the profanity. And then you get the Uncle Fucker song,
which includes
the following line. You don't eat or sleep or mow the lawn. You just fuck your uncle all day long. And it just, you know, you hear that, and it just makes you sort of, like, cringe, but, you're laughing at the same time. And you know what? There are no sacred cows. The whole point of what they do, Parker and Stone, is to slaughter sacred cows. And they go through a litany of them. So that definitely had to be on the list.
And they are behind awesome. The musical, awesome. The Book of Mormons, which I have not yet seen, but it's playing here in Chicago and sold out all the way, I think, through June. But I'll definitely get my tickets. Anything those guys are behind, I want to check out.
Anything.
Love them.
Great pick. Swings us over to my number five. And at number five, I have a film that came out in 1988 with Sean Penn and Robert Duvall. Not a comedy here. Speaking of the movie Colors.
Nice.
And really, this is like back in the day when this was sort of shocking. There were a lot of the N-word was being used, there were F-bombs being dropped, and of course these two patrol officers were going around the bad sides of LA, and there's the gang fights, gang warfare. One thing for some reason that's actually funny about it is I probably was not even out of grade school when I had rented this movie, and I rented it and was watching it by myself. And my mom came into the room and was asking what I was watching. And I was like, oh, nothing, you know, blah, blah, blah. And right at that point is when the cops bust like a drug house. They bring out a lady fully naked, bushes on the screen, full frontal. Was it President Bush? The N-word is being used, F-bombs. And she's like, you're stopping that right now. She goes over. She hits the eject. This is in the VCR days. It comes out of the top of the VCR. Yeah. Takes the tape away. And I had to end up sneaking back and taking the tape back to finish the movie. And that was my Color story. But it still sticks with me at the time. It was sort of a shocking drama at the time.
Yeah. The same thing happened with me and my mom, but it wasn't Colors in the VCR. So. All right.
Matt, what do you got at five?
Actually, The Exorcist. Did I steal one up higher on your
list? It's on my list.
Oh, okay.
Oh, boy.
I mean, okay, you want to talk about profanity coming out of the mouth of the young Linda Blair. Oh, my God, dude.
Some nasty lines
lick
there.
Lick me. And then she starts telling the one priest to f*** the other priest. You know, it's like, holy crap. You know, what am I watching here? I mean, they did that possession by the demons so well. It sticks with me, man. It's terrifying.
No doubt. Scary movie and profane.
And, yeah, and I think here's a good example where it's not just like, you know, we're saying a swear word every other line just to be hip or just because we can. Like, the use of profanity in that movie was really good to drive home the point that this is not okay what's going on with her. So.
Right.
Anyway.
Well, and it's timeless, too. If kids today are still afraid of Linda Blair, you walk into any Halloween store...
I'm still afraid of Linda Blair.
She was on Supernatural, and I couldn't watch it. I was afraid of her. I laid in bed that night thinking, I can't do it. But it was, I don't know if it was 72 or 73. That movie... 73. See what I'm telling you?
Yes.
Sal is...
That's why he's here.
Human computer wingman. But it was... Think about what was going on.
Yeah.
Culturally, with women, with children. That did not happen. I'm sorry, but you had she was 11... 12 at the time, Linda Blair?
Maybe even shocking. 9. I mean, she was very young when they made that movie. Jawbox. Young. How old was Linda Blair in I say 9.
I believe she was 12.
Okay.
She's humping a crucifix.
Yeah.
That is just not... You can't...
That's not okay at any age,
No, it really isn't.
No, still isn't. Nice pick, Matt. Got us started there with the humping of the crucifix.
And I'm sorry if it was up higher on anybody's
list. Oh, you rolled my number one.
Oh, boy.
Really?
Oh, boy.
Me too.
Oh, boy.
Oh, geez, oh, man. Really?
We'll talk about it more.
Me too.
Into our fours. What do you got sitting at four, Nicole?
Number four, I have Step Brothers. And the reason that I picked Step Brothers is because it's profane to me. And I use profane in the sense that Sal does, not sacred. It's just disrespectful. And these two guys are so disrespectful about the process of being adults. They're just such idiots. And the way they talk to each other, aside from the one saying that, you know, he sings so beautiful that it's like a combination of Jesus and Fergie. That's the nicest thing that he says. But they're so...
Baby when, Jesus, wasn't it?
Do you remember when they're really mad because they can't watch TV? And so they say, this house is a fucking prison on planet bullshit in a galaxy of this sucks camel dicks. And they just can't handle the fact that there's limits put on them at all, or wrap their head around the idea that they could turn on the TV if they want to.
Yeah.
Bunch of goofs, those guys.
Everything is wrong with that movie, and I love it.
I love it, too.
Nice pick. Nice pick. Sal, what do you got sitting there for?
Number four, I have A Clockwork Orange.
Nice.
Oh, and, wow. Yeah. Okay, when we're talking about profane language, we're talking about the creation of a language in which to be artfully profane. It's sort of bizarro world Shakespeare. And in order to understand what's really going on, you sort of have to unlock Anthony Burgess's dialect, the same way you kind of have to unlock Occidental English to understand Shakespeare. And it's a great dialect to be covertly profane. And there's I know half a dozen guys that could speak DeLarge all day, every day, and nothing else. So that's going to sit at number four on my list.
That scares me. That last thing you said scares me.
It really should.
The book actually has it at like an index in the back where it has a translation.
Glossary.
Exactly,
crazy.
Yes.
Crazy. Good pick at number four. Love when that movie comes up on CinemaJaw.
Yeah.
At number four, I have a movie that came out just a couple years ago, 2011. It's a hockey movie, and we have hockey season just starting. I'm speaking of the Sean William Scott comedy, Goon.
You actually saw that?
I did, and it's much better than you would expect. Gave this thing a spin. I have written down here, the F-bomb is dropped 248 times in the film, and it's only 92 minutes long, so it's every third word. But also, Liv Schreiber is in here. And basically, Sean William Scott plays a goon for a minor league hockey team. The fight scenes are hilarious. It's just crude humor. Again, I think it would surprise a lot of people how funny of a movie it is. It's one of those where the fight scene breaks out and you're laughing at how hysterical that the fight is already. The guy's just getting pummeled on the ice. And again, with hockey season, give it a spin. I think it's a little bit of a hidden gem. Goon, my number four.
Okay, at number four, again, I could be stealing somebody's number one here, but I've talked about it a lot before on the Jaw, so I'm putting it a little lower on this list, The Big Lebowski. We have to at least address the fact that the dude can't stop swearing. I think that's even a line in the movie where he's like, you know, Sam Elliott comes in at the end, he's like, one question, dude, what's with all the cuss words? What the fuck are you talking about, man? You know, it's classic, great use of profanity in a comedy. I love it.
Nothing more can be said about The Big Lebowski. We love the film here. Nice pick at number four.
Thank you.
Into our threes. Nicole, what do you got sitting there?
I love The Big Lebowski. I love how natural the swearing is.
Yeah.
It really is just like butter.
It is.
Soft butter being spread on bread. It doesn't seem like an effort. Well played. My number three was Goodfellas. Yeah. Goodfellas. My husband and I used to take mental health days where we'd basically both call in sick to work because we wanted to and spend the day together before kids when we could spend the day together.
Yeah.
And one day we went out and we bought some videos because that was when we bought videos. He bought Goodfellas and I bought Father of the Bride.
Ooh, who won there?
Go figure. Well, we watched them both. Well, actually, we watched Goodfellas.
Those are both good movies.
And he fell asleep for Father of the Bride. But, I mean, I remember... Do you know the part when she asks him for money and he says, how much do you need? And she says, this much. And she's basically giving her little fingers how big the stack needs to be.
Right.
And then she just drops to her knees.
Yeah.
Like, this is what I'll do for this.
Yes.
This is what I'm worth to you. And to me, that is really profane in terms of, I mean, I'm supportive of that. If that's what you have to do, you have to do. And I, you know, I'm not under any delusion that marriage is some unconditional love, because it's not. That's parenthood.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's like saying, this is what you're worth, and you're worth this much more. What I'm doing when I say this much is making the stack of money bigger if you kneel down in the kitchen. And I think that is ultimately profane.
Yes.
There's a lot, can't argue there. No, yeah, absolutely. You can't argue with that. There's a lot of reasons why that movie is profane. I mean, the language too, and the violence, certainly, but I never picked up on that particular
aspect. But also
aspect.
One of the best movies, obviously, probably in my top 10 of all time. I love Goodfellas.
Definitely.
Yeah, for sure.
Nice pick, Nicole. Nice pick. Sal, what do you got sitting at number three?
Number three on my list is also Goodfellas.
Nice.
And I'm going to look at a different aspect of it. First of all, it is the pinnacle for urban ethnic profanity, particularly Italian American profanity, you know, the archetypal profanity that I grew up with, and it's spot on. And just, I mean, how often they use it, the way that you can put it, like the word fuck, you can use it like the word dude. You can say like dude or dude. But the way they use the word fuck is the same thing. They put different shades of meaning by changing inflection. So in terms of just profane language, they do a great job with it. So I think that probably carries the banner for that particular brand of profanity.
I agree. And you can't get any better than Ray Liotta when he's just upset with Karen at all times. Fuck Karen! I love it. Great pick. Great pick at number three. I hate to bring it down here a notch, and I hate to give the Jawheads the false idea that I'm some big Sean William Scott fan, but I actually have another Sean William Scott movie.
What the hell is wrong with you, man?
This is uncanny. But and they don't really swear too much, but this movie was extremely shocking when it came out. Of course, I'm speaking of the teen comedy that came out in 1999, American Pie. Also, I mean, first off, you have a guy humping a pie.
Yes.
Which is already crazy. But two, you also have a girl going down on a guy who ends up finishing in a cup, and you see his...
A cup of beer.
You see his sperm swimming around in the beer. Sean William Scott, who I'm apparently in love with here, has this hilarious scene where he ends up drinking the beer. There were a few of these scenes that were just absolutely outrageous to see in the theater the first time.
Sure.
And I was right of that age. I was like in college, and I remember I was just laughing hysterically. But I went back and I watched it because American Reunion had just come out. So I went back and I watched the first American Pie to sort of rekindle the magic of the gang. And I was still sort of shocked, like, wow, that was a long time ago that this came out, and it was quite shocking for the times.
I agree. They sort of set that bar of what's going to be accepted for the next, you know, 5 years or so.
And it was pie fucking.
It was pie. It turns out, pie fucking.
And it's no John Hughes. You know, my generation, and I don't consider myself old, but John Hughes movies. I mean, my teenage years were a little bit like a John Hughes movie. I mean, I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago. It was very angsty, and we wore those kinds of clothes. But the girls I knew that were in band did not talk about where that putting their instruments in their vaginas. Right. I think it definitely, like you say, it set the bar. It really changed that approach to sexuality for teenage girls. So protect it. 16 Candles, Jake Ryan, he's so great,
Jake.
But then this girl in American Pie is like, I'm boning my clarinet. Do you know, it's such a different, and now that's how it is.
And for bringing MILF into the popular lexicon.
No doubt.
Just right there.
Yeah.
It deserves to be on the list.
Totally agree.
It's a landmark. It really is.
It is. That was my number three, American Pie. We're into our, Matt, what's your number three?
Oh, geez. Wow.
I almost skipped you.
No, it's okay. It's totally okay, because my number three, actually, we've discussed it. It was South Park, Bigger, Longer, and Uncut. And I had the note that we had to talk about Uncle Fucker.
And it was already mentioned.
Yeah. Should we play the song?
Yeah, let's play a bit of the song.
All right, play a little bit of it.
Uncle Fucker. You don't eat, no sleep, or mow the
lawn. You just fuck your uncle all day long.
What's going on here?
What's garbage?
Well, what do you expect? They're Canadian.
Gotta love that song.
Oh, man. Yeah. Those awesome. Guys are fantastic.
I agree. Great pick at number three. We're into our twos. Some heavy hitters here. Nicole, what do you got?
My number two is Pulp Fiction. I don't even know where to start, but I'm going to start with Mental Health Day. This was another Mental Health Day pick of my husband's.
He's got good picks for his mental health days.
What was your pick that day?
God,
was it Father of the Bride 2?
It was probably Father of the Bride 2 or, you know, Shawshank Redemption, which is absolutely one of my favorite movies on the ever in the whole world, even though they crawl through poo and that makes me want to puke. But Pulp Fiction for me, it was shocking to me. But this was 94, 95, around that time.
94, sure.
Yeah, and I was newly married, and you would think that I would have had a little bit more life experience in terms of the GIMP and the...
Yeah.
And I was really upset by the... You know Marcellus, when they save him?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
from,
of course.
Yeah,
from
sure.
the GIMP. And,
yes,
the GIMP.
From what's going on.
Yeah.
And he says... And Bruce Willis's character says, "Are you okay?" And he's like, "No, I'm not fucking okay." You know,
I'm pretty fucking far from okay.
And this guy lives a life. I mean, he's a drug dealer, he's a criminal, and he is not okay. And I thought, well, thank God he's not okay, because I am not okay.
Yeah.
It was a hard movie to watch.
Yeah.
I thought.
Especially that part. Yeah.
That was a super hard part to watch, even though he's a grown up.
Sure. And it's funny now, though, looking back, like Tarantino obviously just came out with Django Unchained, and there's a lot of talk that maybe he went too far with the N-word, and there's some violent scenes in there.
Sure.
But I'm so used to it now, I think, because of the bars that stuff like Pulp Fiction set, that now I go see his movies, nothing can really shock me, it doesn't seem.
I agree. Like, that's kind of what I said with Django. Like, had anybody else made that movie, I would be saying movie of the year. But because it was from Tarantino, I expect more from the guy.
Yeah, yeah, great pick, Nicole. Sal, what do you got sitting at number two?
Number two, I have Taxi Driver. This is a guy, Travis Bickle, whose his semantic map, his filter is profanity. Early on, there's a line in that movie that's particularly impactful, and he says, someday a real rain is going to come and wash all this scum off the street. And that just kind of sets his mind frame. It feels the way that this guy looks at the world. Everything is profane. Everything is just necessarily sort of tinted by this just, profanity that he interprets. So he profanes everything. He profanes politics. And there's two scenes in that movie that just really resonate with me. There's one after getting the unlikely date with the beautiful Sybil Shepherd. And he takes her to a porn movie in Times Square because he's socially retarded. And he's unable to communicate the fact that, he doesn't understand that this is wrong. He doesn't have the semantic map to convey that. And then there's a scene where Travis is talking to Matthew and they're negotiating for Violet. I mean, that is just profanity squared. It's essence of profanity. There's no way to watch that and not need to take a shower.
I like that. I agree. Get clean after you get done watching Taxi Driver.
Oh, yeah.
You know what? That movie, to me, that character is, and this is the professional in me coming out, but it's like he has, his emotional skin is non-existent. He doesn't have any. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, he's pretty much a sociopath. I mean.
I would give him even like a borderline personality disorder. He can't handle human interaction. I think this is like me going too far, but it's so deep. It's not that he's socially completely out of control because he doesn't know what to do, but he's tortured by human contact too. It hurts him too much to have it.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
No, yeah. It ultimately drives him to murder, which is kind of an act of heroism, but at the same time, it's still...
In the performance.
Right. I was just going to say...
It's transcendent.
When you think of it,
it's the best work he's ever
done. How complicated of a character we're describing, to put that up on the screen by Bob De Niro, as he likes to be called now.
Bobby.
That's what I call him.
Awesome.
Yeah. When we're hanging out.
Great pick. Heavy hitter right there.
Is that
there.
Just the number two?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
We over to my number two, and this is a little art house. It's a comedy. Came out in 2009. I really urge everyone to check this one out. It is entitled In the Loop. And this is a British political satire about the events that led up to the Iraq invasion and how the U.S. got the British cooperation to go into Iraq. And
sure.
It's really, it's a satire, and they're using the F-bomb so creatively. You hear it used constantly in the movie, but hilariously, fitty, fuck. They're constantly dropping the F-bomb. James Gandolfini's in here, and it's really the behind the scenes of the interns and these like low-level officials that accidentally say war is unfree. you can't get around it. And the U.S. picks up on this British guy and brings him over to the U.S. and starts interviewing him. And he's in meetings and he's way over his head because they're just trying to get the idea that the British are coming on board to join the U.S. And I am telling you, it is one of the funniest movies in the last 10 years. Huge fan of In the Loop. But you got to look for this one. It is out on DVD. That's my Q-tip of the show. In the Loop, my number two. Matt, what do you got sitting there?
All right. So at my number two, I have a documentary. And it's by Paul Provenza. It came out in 2005. It's called The Aristocrats. Are you guys aware of this film?
Oh, man, yeah.
This is the dirtiest joke of all time,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, really
sure. I've seen it.
Are you aware of this, Nicole?
Nope.
So, okay, so with comedians, there's...
I forgot about this one. Good pick, Matt.
Thanks, excellent. Yeah. No, I got to actually meet Paul Provenza and talk to him about making this film, and he showed us a real early version of it. It was pretty amazing. And, in fact, Bob Saget does about a 12-minute version of this joke, which is the filthiest joke of all time. In fact,
that's magnificent.
It's really like the jazz of profanity. What it is a free form, long form joke, and the whole point is to get as disgusting and vile as you can. I mean, like every philia that you can put a prefix on is used in this joke to maximum capacity. I mean, it's freaking dirty. And they go through all the greats. I mean, Don Rickles is here. I mentioned Bob Saget. I think Joan Rivers. There's some really big celebrities, and they do this joke. And at the end, the punchline is just right out of left field. And I don't want to ruin it. You got to see the movie. But it's not about the punchline. It's about the setup and the buildup. And it's pretty amazing, like, which places the comedians go. Do they go to a sexual thing, or do they go to a fecal thing? Did they go to a violent thing?
Oh, I win this one.
It's so messed up. You have to see The Aristocrats.
Nice pick.
Not to be confused with the Disney movie The Aristocats.
Don't want to screw those up.
No, you don't.
Nice pick.
Especially
Matt.
On Mental Health Day, Nicole. I'm just letting you know.
Did you guys ever play the game where you would like sit around with your friends and try to like think of the most revolting and seriously profane thing that you could think of to say, and then try to top each other?
Whoa.
Of course.
Not me.
This movie blows all of whatever I came out with out of the water.
Oh, boy.
And Bob Saget, too.
Bob Saget is by far the filthiest.
Fantastic. Yeah.
I mean, nobody even comes close to the stuff that comes out of Bob Saget's mouth.
Yeah, you'll never think of Full House the same.
It's totally anachronistic, exactly. That's what makes it good.
Yeah, I love it. We're into our heavy hitters here, the number ones. Nicole, what do you got as your most profane movie?
Well, a couple of my number ones, I was having a hard time with number ones, you know, because I wasn't sure. Clockwork Orange, I knew you were going to go there. Totally. But this is kind of a left field one. The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Have you guys seen the Swedish version?
Well, sure.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
And have you read any of the books?
Yeah, read all three.
Okay. So you know that the Swedish version comes very close.
It does.
To the books. It's not... To me, it wasn't so much the language. It's the idea that so little care is taken for a child. That a father would be so hurtful to his daughter. Think about it. I mean, it's awful. This father is a horrible, horrible father. And then the guardian who's supposed to be taking care of her, what he does to her, and then what she does back.
Yep.
And I found myself going, you go, girl. And that made me sick. That made me horrified that I was rooting for her. That you can root for somebody who is hurting somebody else so badly. I hear you.
It's complicated, right?
That's the beauty, the beauty of the story. Now, did you see both versions, the U.S. and the Swedish?
I haven't seen the U.S. version.
Yeah, now I've seen them both, and I think, Matt, you have also.
I
was a much bigger fan of the Swedish versions. I think they just... I don't know. They connected much more with me. Not that Fincher in the U.S. version is totally Hollywoodized it, but he just did it enough where it just didn't have that same sort of like dig into your skin as the Swedish version.
Swedish version was so cold.
It was.
The cinematography was cold. The color was cold.
It was austere. Yeah, precisely.
It was completely different. It's like Let the Right One In. Have you that movie?
I love that one also.
And there was the American, and then there was the and the. I think
rule
it was Swedish,
of thumb:
right?
Stick with the Swedish version.
Absolutely,
again.
Yes. And well, I know
you know what? The
I'm
only
Swedish.
Thing I put
creepy.
Only one proviso on that is that Rooney Mara, as Lisbeth Salander. She was really good.
She was.
I mean, I think that was a really transcendent performance. But otherwise, yeah, in every particular, I prefer the Swedish version.
Nice.
And most people haven't seen it. It's irritating.
You know, honestly, I like them both. I really do. For different reasons. Like, the American version, the ending, I thought was a little bit more true to the character. Like, she was beginning to open up to, and I've mentioned this before on the Josh, she's beginning to open up to Mikael, and they have that scene where she's buying him a gift and she goes to give it to him, and then she sees him with the other woman and she throws it away, and she feels stupid that she had opened herself up that way, which isn't in the Swedish version. And I thought that was a really good character point,
but
that should have been.
And me and Matt have discussed this before, and I like that it wasn't in the Swedish version, but I have not read the books. But in the Swedish version, I love the fact that there isn't that connection between her and Mikael. I don't want her to feel vulnerable to him at any point. Yeah, but
I didn't feel the connection in the book either with her. Mm-hmm. What I felt from her in the book was that she should have the connection. So she was kind of going through the motions, because this was the first time she had somebody follow through and have her back and really go to bat for her. But yet it wasn't a natural feeling for her. So to see it, to
she had no context for it.
No, I agree with Sal. She didn't have the context, but I think her ice was starting to melt. We're getting a little too philosophical.
It's a good one, though, because it's like she was locked in a room for 20 years and didn't understand the range of emotions, how to express them, or even how to discern one from the other.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice.
Just what a great character that is.
No doubt about
Wonderful.
Sal, what do you got sitting at number one?
Okay, it's already been mentioned as a number five, which was
shocking. Sorry.
Also, a hockey movie that's profane that isn't Slapshot, that was a little shocking too.
Yes.
Number one is The Exorcist. For the life of me, can't see how you could go with anything else. It's the profanity superfecta. You have profane language, profane imagery. You have profaning of the sacred and the innocent, and profaning of icons. You have the profaning of people's most deeply held beliefs and institutions. And just in terms of psychological impact, you'd have to talk long and hard to convince me that there's ever been a movie made that has been more impactful psychologically. And people, when they talk about that movie, you hear a lot of, I slept with the lights on for a week, or
the
rest
of my life.
Well, yeah, man, this movie, it fucks with your head more than any other movie, and it's almost universal. And in fact, this movie would be in almost any top five list that I have. It's one of the top five movies, period, that I have. But in terms of profanity, it is just a masterwork. In terms of, using that, and really, profanity, good, bad, or indifferent, it's about creators telling stories. Is it important to the story? Does it move the story forward? Is it good storytelling? And the level of profanity, and particularly for the time, was just incredibly impactful. Just even talking about it, there's stuff I'm running through my head and thinking about it. The crucifix.
I think it's even more than for the time, though, even today.
Yeah,
it really stood the test of time.
It's mind-bending. And I have absolutely no sacred cows. Nothing. I will push every envelope. I believe in that. I really believe that either everything's okay or nothing is okay. If you don't like it, switch the fucking channel. But there's stuff in that movie that messes with my head. That's saying a lot
right there. Good number ones.
But you know what? Let me say one little thing as a parent, because I'm the one person here who has a kid who's going to teenager.
Yes.
In a month, my kid's going to be a teenager.
Wow.
He has watched the episode of South Park, where Paris Hilton has the... What are they?
Stupid spoiled whore.
Oh, God. It's just horrible. I mean, he's seen a bunch of things. When we told him that we saw Ted, he's like, oh, did you guys hear the thunder song? And my husband and I had the cartoon head.
It's on YouTube.
The cartoon head where you go... Yeah. And your eyes pop out like Tom and Jerry. We said, how did you see that? Well, I heard about it on the bus. Sure you did. But he has asked me to see The Exorcist. He has asked to see it. And I've said, no, we watched Children of the Corn. He laughed. It still scares the shit out of me. You know what I mean?
Yes.
But The Exorcist, like you said, on every level of wrongness,
It'll mess him up.
It will mess him up. I tell him that. He goes, oh, Mom, it's not like, you know, the old days.
You should let him watch it.
No. You know what? No. And when he's old enough to pay his own therapy bills, fine. He can watch it.
I like it. Swings us over to my number one. I try to match The Exorcist because that's a heavy movie.
It is.
And this movie came out in 1992. It stars Harvey Keitel. And it's profane, but it's also extremely vulgar. I'm speaking of the NC-17 rated Bad Lieutenant. Yes.
Brilliant.
Thank you, Sal. Keitel plays the bad lieutenant, and he has three kids. They're all in Catholic school. In the beginning of the movie, he's dropping a couple of his kids off at school, and instantly, once he drops them off from school and goes to work, he starts sniffing lines of coke, and it starts from there. The guy is busting drug dealers and smoking crack with them. And in this film, to me, right up there with The Exorcist, like Sal was describing, one of the most just shocking and vulgar scenes of all time, which is seeing a nun raped by two men in a church. Wow, this is really gets to you. And we're talking about that kind of subject matter, and then Harvey Keitel's on the case of solving that. And they recently remade this, or I should say put a sequel out, Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call with Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, the foolish Nick Cage.
And let's be honest, every time you trade in Harvey Keitel for Nick Cage, you lose. You know, it's not a good move. But it didn't work as good. I still recommend that one. But if you get a chance, Bad Lieutenant, I still find it shocking.
And the scene that just really gets to me is the one where he pulls these two girls over. And
he takes
you know what I'm talking
about.
Right. Yeah, right. He gets a Hummer from this girl in order to get her out. And he's not even a patrolman. He's a lieutenant.
Right. He's so filthy, this guy.
So out of hand. and the overarching, like, the monologue is him betting on baseball. He gets touched betting on baseball. And the story arc, I mean, it just goes downhill with, like, his losses and gambling. So it has a little bit of everything. It's a great choice.
It is.
I'm jealous.
Good. I got a good number one there. Matt, what do you got sitting there?
This, I'm shocked we haven't covered this one. I'm so glad it didn't come up on anyone's list. And for the record, Sal, I'm sorry about The Exorcist.
No worries.
When you make swearing into an art form, for my money, nobody has done it better than Al Pacino did in Scarface. I mean, you know, when he says motherfucker, it's seriously like it comes out of his mouth. It's almost like a musical note. You motherfucker. I mean, like, that's like breathtaking. I love it. The whole movie, I could just listen to the soundtrack, just listen to the audio, turn the picture off, and every swear, like, you cockroach. I mean, like, words that aren't even swears, he makes them into swears. I mean,
look at that pelican.
Her womb is so polluted, I can't even have a kid with her.
Oh, brilliant. I mean, like,
when you profane the womb.
Yeah,
vessel, the gross human life.
Yeah, he's great, and he's violent, he's vicious, he's evil to the core. You know, he's almost subhuman. I love Scarface. I love Al Pacino's performance. One of the best profane movies of all time, my opinion.
Yeah, it's been too long since I've seen it. I actually want to rewatch it. It's been so long. I mean, kid,
right.
I got to see it again.
You got to see it again.
I love it. Good picks. Jawheads, if you have Twitter pulled up and we missed one of your favorite profane movies, shoot us a tweet at CinemaJaw. We'll retweet it and mention it on the show. What we're going to do is take a quick break. When we come back, Matt is taking on Nicole and Sal in Jodie Foster movie trivia, plus a quick DVD review of Game Change, and me and Matt battle on a topic. Who's had a better career, Arnold or Sly? We'll be right back on CinemaJaw.
Hi, I'm Matt Kay with a CinemaJaw movie fact. The first film distributed with a PG-13 rating was Red Dawn, which was released August 10th, 1984. Meanwhile, Henry and June, starring Uma Thurman, was the first film to receive the NC-17 rating upon its release October 5th, 1990. And that is your CinemaJaw movie fact.
And we are back on CinemaJaw, hanging out with Sal and Nicole Knepper, who has a new book coming out, Moms Who Drink and Swear, True Tales of Loving My Kids While Losing My Mind. Check for it in bookstores and also ebook coming April 2nd. We threw a couple of things into the jaw box, Matt.
Yeah,
so let's open up that jaw box.
Bring out the gimp.
Bring out the gimp. As we talked about him earlier, Elias, tell us what's in that jaw box.
What's your pleasure, Mr. Cotton?
The box.
We got a box. Oh, what's in the box?
Hello, guys. All right, we are starting off today with the tagline for Bullet to the Head. It is, revenge never gets old.
But
Sylvester Stallone, turns out he does.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. Okay, and this is actually surprising here. How old was Linda Blair filming The Exorcist? There's no conclusive evidence from Google. I did the math. She was born 1959. The Exorcist was released in June 73, which means she might have been 13 during filming if it was 72 they were filming. If you got, got where I'm going with that.
Right in there.
Yeah. But her birthday is this day right now we're recording, January 22nd. Yeah.
Happy birthday.
Crazy.
How eerie is that?
What are the odds?
Yeah, after all those mean things Nicole said about her.
You know, it turns out she filled out rather nicely.
She sure did.
Definitely.
She sure did.
And she's a beautiful woman. If you look at her, she really is. I mean, empirically, she's attractive. It's just that she will always be puking pea soup and spinning her head around and humping a crucifix, always.
And speaking of birthdays, I got the best idea for birthday presents for both you, Rye, and Matt. I'm going to get you one poster. It's going to be the Dude, Where's My Car poster. I'm going to rip it in half. Matt, you get the Ashton side since you're in love with him. And Rye, you get to Sean William Scott. So.
We should just get tattoos, Rye, so when we like hold hands.
Exactly.
Like, I got Ashton on one side. Okay.
That's such a good idea, Elias. We won't slam you shut in the jaw box. We'll just put you in there gently.
All right.
Thanks,
bye.
Buddy. All right. Brings us to a segment, Matt, we call
Cinema War.
And Cinema War works like this, Jawheads. This is where me and Matt battle on a topic each week, and our guest this week, Sal and Nicole, get to play judge and jury and pick who won this Cinema War. And it's important because me and Matt are battling for 20 seconds of jaw time to rant and rave on whatever we want to. Now, Stallone has a new movie. Obviously, we just talked about it, Bullet to the Head, and Stallone had The Last Stand out. So it got us thinking. Elias, tell the Jawheads at home what today's Cinema War topic is.
Today's Cinema War topic is, with the new films from both Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone, it got us thinking, which of these two has had a better career? Matt, you'll be fighting for Arnold. Rye, you'll be fighting for Stallone. Let the Cinema War begin.
Yo, Maddie! Let's be serious here, just for a minute. Stallone has had a much, much better career than Arnold. He gave us two iconic characters in Rocky and Rambo. The original Rocky, Matt, actually won the Academy Award for Best Picture in 1976. Meanwhile, Arnold has never been in a movie that's ever even been nominated for a Best Picture.
You know what? That aside, let's do the math here. Arnold Schwarzenegger came from Austria. There was a huge language barrier that he had to overcome. He went through his phase with pumping iron. He transcended that. He got through the language barrier, and he became an iconic actor. Sure, in largely a throwaway action film genre, but who doesn't love them some Arnie?
Oh, pump this, Matt. Stallone actually writes and directs movies as well. Heck, he wrote the screenplay for all six Rocky films. He directed four of them. He also directed notable films Stay Alive and The Expendables and wrote others such as Cobra, Cliffhanger, and First Blood.
Yeah, but he can't even speak.
Oh, like Arnold's much better?
Well,
come on.
This is true, but like, okay, first of all, let's just call out the elephant in the room here. Arnold Schwarzenegger was the governor of California. That is a better career than Sylvester Stallone. Sorry.
Well, George Bush was president of the United States. Here we go, Matt. I'm not saying Stallone has much range but when it comes to his acting, but compared to Arnold, he's goddamn Meryl Streep, starring in Assassins, Copland, Stop or My Mom Will Shoot. The guy does a little bit of comedy, a little bit of action, a hell of a lot more than Arnold.
You got me on Copland, but you want to talk about range? Arnie's got some great range, man. He's done drama, you know. He's done, let's not forget Terminator. That performance was harrowing. Nice night for a walk, eh?
Matt, Arnold plays characters, though, that have no heart, a.k.a. the Terminator, like you speak of. Meanwhile, Stallone's characters bleed with passion. That's why we cheer for Rocky against Apollo, Mr. T, and the Russian. It's what makes us feel so sympathetic with Rambo at the end of First Blood when he admits he can't even hold a job parking cars. Stallone's iconic scene of him running up the steps in Philadelphia is better than anything Arnold has ever done. Stallone wins this one by knockout.
Here's the thing, and I hate to beat up this point, but this is about who had the better career. Schwarzenegger overcame so much. He's not even a citizen of this country. He came in, he became the governor of one of the largest states in the Union. He definitely conquered Hollywood. He overcame so much adversity, and he triumphed. So Schwarzenegger had the better career. He became an American icon against all odds. And, you know, that's why my vote's with him.
Well, we're button heads here. Nothing new on Cinema War. Nicole, Sal, we throw it over to you. You got to pick one winner.
What are your thoughts here?
This is a tough one. I mean, I'm glad I'm not on that side of the couch.
Is that we are deciding who has the better career.
Right.
Correct.
Overall career?
You've been listening, Nicole. I like
overall
this.
Career? Right. Yes. Or semantics career in Hollywood?
Yes.
Overall.
And you got to judge the argument. Boy, tough call.
All right, I'll say this. Both of them have had to overcome incoherence. Neither one of them can speak. Neither one of them is really an actor. So if you look at their body of work, Arnold Schwarzenegger embraced the fact that there's no way that there's anything that he can do that's going to be humanizing. Okay, so phenotypically, he was larger than life. He was science fiction. He was fantasy. He understood what he needed to do to be viable. And in that context, look at the icons. Okay, you have the Terminator, you have Predator, two of the greatest science fiction fantasy type franchises. He started out, I think, with Conan. Or actually, no, wait, before that, he had that bodybuilding movie.
Pumping Iron, yeah.
Right, Pumping Iron. So I think my point is that he had a little better understanding of what his strengths and weaknesses were. And then the thing that definitely tips it in is being the governor of California. That's pretty significant in terms of
boy.
A career.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, dude.
So what do you guys think? You got to pick a winner.
I would have to go with Matt on this. What do you think, Nick?
Well, I believe Ryan came a little bit more better prepared with his
That's
argument.
True. That is true. But I was pretty good for going off the cuff.
But I have to agree that Arnold has had a better, more well-rounded career.
Wow, I'm
career.
Going down. I can't
See,
believe this.
I didn't
and
even have to write
he had a
it.
Baby in Junior. He had a baby. And that kind of range. He played a pregnant man and cried.
Oh, that movie was an
don't,
abortion
don't
plan.
Say, don't say that that wasn't huge.
I can't believe I'm losing because of the movie Junior. This is despicable.
Because of Junior and because
yeah,
of
really
Twins.
Sorry about that
what about Kindergarten Cop?
All I mean, right, enough said. This is terrible. Matt, you got your win. You got your win.
Yeah, you just talked past the clothes there, dude. You shouldn't have brought that up.
Take your
yeah.
20 seconds of jaw time to rant and rave on whatever you want.
All right, I would like to take this opportunity to retract an official statement I made in a previous Cinema War win when I said that your three names are being revoked. Joseph Gordon-Levitt will now be known as Joe Levitt. Turns out, Joseph Gordon-Levitt is a hyphenated name. I want to give it back to him. Joseph Gordon-Levitt, you're welcome.
Wow, got it done in 20 seconds, too.
There you go.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt is back reinstated here on Cinema Jaw.
Yeah, his mom was Gordon, his dad was Levitt. So there you go. He's Gordon-Levitt.
All right, before we get to trivia, in honor of the Lifetime Achievement Award going to Jodie Foster. We are playing Jodie Foster movie trivia. One quick DVD review for you. Game Change, which came out on HBO and had been screening there since March for us non-HBO people, though it finally came out to DVD. Julianne Moore looks and acts so much like Sarah Palin that at times you forget you're watching a movie. The story picks up a couple of weeks before John McCain selected Palin as a running mate during the 2008 election and runs through the time they lost to Obama. Based on the book by the same name, we get a look backstage at the drama took place between Palin and the campaign managers. Written from actual facts received from interviews of people involved, Palin does not come across in the best light. She clearly was not ready to be thrust onto the national stage. Her lack of knowledge when it comes to foreign policy and basic facts on the economy is downright embarrassing. The movie does show her strengths, however. Her ability to connect with people and her ability to talk confidently about subjects which she was more comfortable with. Ed Harris plays McCain, while Woody Harrelson plays the campaign manager. Both are quality performances, Matt. I thoroughly enjoyed looking back at how Sarah Palin went from a virtually unknown governor of Alaska to one of the most famous women in America. Ride the Movie Guy's great on this one. Three Jaws, a solid B for Game Change. Check this one out.
Yeah, I mean, lover or hater, Sarah Palin is definitely noteworthy and interesting character.
Well, I'm curious to know what her areas of expertise are. I mean, aside from picking out stripper names for her children.
Yeah, we're all curious
she
on that.
She can
Russia
from her house.
Yeah, I don't know if she
actually
had...
I don't think that that's true, strictly speaking. I think
saying that she has areas of expertise is overstating
kind of a stretch,
it. She,
isn't
she
it?
Was more comfortable with subjects such as energy and such that she would stick to. And it was interesting them trying to get her to talk about the things she was more familiar with in the debates, in the interviews and such, trying to, as they would call, pivot, turn to something that you're more familiar with. Interesting movie. Definitely check it out.
It's a tough profession, you know, politics. So, I mean, yeah, it's interesting.
Now, we are to the trivia segment we play here every week on Cinema Jaw. Nicole and Sal are taking on Matt in Jodie Foster movie trivia.
Are you guys going to do Nell?
And yes, Nell. We were talking about this before we went on, and it's one of the questions of the trivia, so it's already ruined. But give me your best Nell, Nicole.
Chinkapay.
My name's Nell. Like one of the
Chinkapay.
There it was. That was our rendition of Nell, me and Nicole.
I'm just going to take this part. I'm going to take the audio out and just play it on a loop.
I love it.
To sleep
but
every night.
If I was up and moving, you could see the interpretive kind of movement I could do, and I could do it just like her, and it would have been
convincing.
Better.
Sure, sure. Now, to determine who goes first, we have a segment we call Cinema Feud. Think Family Feud. We went out and pulled 25 of our jawheads to get the top three answers are on the board. Nicole, we throw this question over to you. You're trying to guess, obviously, the most popular answer. Name a character from The Wizard of Oz.
The Tin Man.
The Tin Man. Wow, came to mind. Good answer, good answer. We throw it up on the board. Survey says... Number one. Unbelievable,
whoa,
Nicole.
Whoa.
Number one was the Tin Man. Was the Tin Man. 41% of the votes.
Nice. Really?
That is shocking.
Shocking.
Man, what would have you guessed?
I would have said Dorothy.
Dorothy. Another
do you know,
good guess.
Do you know why I think it's number one? Do you remember in Christmas Story? I like the Tin Man. Remember that kid?
Just sticks with you.
Yeah.
Dorothy was Matt's answer. Also a good answer. Survey says. Number three.
Really?
Number three, 16% of the vote.
Get out.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's see what number two was. And number two was, survey says...
Toto!
Son of a gun. Toto
really?
With 25%
Toto.
Of the vote.
That's
yes.
shocking. I mean, even the Wicked Witch, I would have put over Toto.
I guess it rains down in Africa.
They
that
were a
one?
Great band.
Is that?
Yeah.
God
that,
awful.
No? No?
Wow. Big, Rosanna. Big. Nicole, with the answer of the Tin Man, you have the choice now. You got control of the board. Do you want to go first or let Matt go first?
Of course I want to go first.
Absolutely.
It's like tic-tac-toe.
Jodie Foster movie trivia. What did you think of her speech?
Can I just take a pass on that? I'm still processing it.
Still processing.
I'm still processing it.
All right, question number one, and this is not a lie. This was the first question of the game. Question number one over to Nicole and Sal. In 1994, Jodie Foster starred alongside Liam Neeson in this drama in which she was raised in isolation and has her own unique language.
Is Liam Neeson covered in squeezy cheese?
In Nicole's version, answer is...
In my mind, he's always covered in squeezy cheese. It's Nell.
1-0, Nicole and Sal. We got that one out of the way. Mm-hmm. Question two, over to Matt. And there are steals if they don't know the answer. Question two, Matt. In this 2005 thriller, Jodie Foster played a mom who has her 6-year-old daughter disappear on an airplane.
Red Eye.
Absolutely incorrect. You guys got a chance for a steal. You do have a lifeline. Our producer, Elias Rodriguez, you got one trip to the ER if you need help on an answer.
Yeah, I absolutely.
We this need was, to go to the ER.
You want to go to the ER? Whoa, we are on our way to the ER. Elias, what was the name of that movie in which Jodie Foster loses her 6-year-old daughter on an airplane?
Okay, your clue is air travel.
Oh, man.
We already knew
which,
it was about
yeah,
air
you know,
travel.
That's really not all that
boy,
awful.
Oh, boy.
She loses her daughter on an airplane. The clue is air travel. It's all coming together now.
Totally, right? That just fine.
Blame the producer.
Man, all right,
air
yeah, look, I have
travel.
No earthly idea. The only thing I'm thinking of is the William Shatner Twilight Zone episode now.
Flying.
Ooh.
Flyers.
We were looking for Flight Plan.
Flight Plan, oh, son of a bitch.
Flight Plan.
She was in a movie called Red Eye, though, wasn't she?
No, she was not. That was Rachel McAdams.
Oh,
they
yes.
They were at the video store at the same time. I do
all right, that. Still 1-0, Nicole and Sal. Question number three is over to them. In the brilliant film Contact, Jodie Foster plays a scientist looking for extraterrestrial life who has a romantic relationship with a Christian philosopher named Palmer Joss, who is played by what actor?
Matthew McConaughey.
2-0, Sal and Nicole, and it should be noted, Nicole, when she was on in episode 74, wiped Matt's ass up. I believe she won 7-1.
And then she beat me in trivia.
It is currently 2-0, Nicole. Question
sorry,
number
set it
four
up.
Over to Matt. Foster appeared in the 1974 film Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore, in which Ellen Bernstein played Alice, a widow who wants to have a singing career in California, but ends up a waitress in a diner owned by Mel. Who directed that movie, Matt? Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore.
Yeah, I mean, that's what spawned the whole...
Mel's Diner.
Yeah, Mel's Diner.
You do have a lifeline.
And then Alice, you know, it's also a good show. All right, fine, let's go to the ER.
Wow, question number four. Who directed Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore?
A director.
Okay, to be fair, we established this before. I don't necessarily write the clues. Anyway, your clue, Matt, is also directed Foster in... Taxi Driver.
Oh, is it Jesus? I'm going to get so much hate mail if I don't
it's
get
not
this
Jesus.
Right. Is it Jesus?
It is not Jesus.
Also directed Foster in Taxi Driver. That was the clue. I'm just repeating.
Oh, yeah. That's okay.
Who directed Taxi Driver? Was it... Dude, I want to edit this out if I get it wrong. I swear to God.
Your time's up.
This will never be on the podcast. Scorsese? Thank God.
Wow. It was an absolute struggle.
I'm really happy he got that.
I knew it was Scorsese, but I was so, like, just... Oh my God! If
Dude,
I got that
you
wrong,
realize you realize we would have had no choice but to clown the shit out of you.
I think I would have
and
left.
And it's a fucking movie.
I just would have left.
Like, yes, beating. I agree. All right,
the pressure.
He's on the board. It is 2-1. Still, Sal and Nicole, and this question is over to him. Jodie Foster won her first Academy Award for this movie, in which she plays Sarah Tobias, a woman who is raped in a bar and subsequently goes to court to get the three men behind bars.
The accused.
Yes.
Great turn in that, by the way.
Absolutely. Really it is 3-1, Nicole and Sal. Firm control here. Question number six is over to Matt. Jodie Foster starred in and directed her first feature film with this 1991 movie about a single mom who finds out her 7-year-old son is a genius.
Martin Scorsese. No, it's Little Man Tate.
Wow, keeping it a ball game. I like it.
It's a good movie. I like that movie.
Oh, I like that movie.
Yeah, it's good.
3-2, still Sal and Nicole, and question number seven is over to them. In 1991's Silence of the Lambs, Foster gets the help of Hannibal Lecter to help track down a serial killer named James Gum, who goes by what nickname?
Buffalo Bill.
4-2, I think that is the ball game because the last... Question of the game.
That was a bunny, man.
Question number eight is this. In this 2007 movie, Foster played a radio show host turned vigilante who tracks down thugs who killed her fiance and took her dog.
Oh, The Crow. That was a great movie.
Got a guess here, Matt? She turned vigilante to find thugs that killed her fiance and took her dog. Of course, the famous line from this movie was, "I want my dog back."
Really?
It was.
Oh, my God. I have no idea.
Are you kidding?
No,
a chance for a steal. Nicole?
I feel like he's kidding.
No.
I'm not.
He doesn't
know
this one.
No, I feel like that you're kidding that it's real.
Oh, no. This is a real movie.
It's real.
It's a guilty pleasure of mine, too. I actually like this movie. It's got some good action sequences. Any guesses?
Sal, you're going to have to help. Are we done with our lifeline? Are we done
with Well, yeah, we'll give them one more lifeline since they already won.
Already
what's the lifeline to question number eight?
Even though they didn't appreciate the first one. Let's see. Opposite of the cowardly many.
Opposite of the cowardly many.
The brave one?
The few and the brave?
The brave one. That is correct. Absolutely. Haven't you not seen this one, Nicole?
I have not. But if it's a guilty pleasure of yours, I will definitely make sure that I don't miss it.
It's really good. She's got short hair in the film, very similar to yours, and she's a total badass, actually. Nicole and
Mayhem?
Sal.
That's the last one. I think it's called Mayhem, the one where she's with John C. Reilly and also...
No, it's called...
what is it called? You know the one I'm talking about, right?
Yeah. Carnage.
Carnage, that made Carnage. That was really good.
It was funny. They win this one 5-2. Nicole is undefeated against Matt Kay in trivia.
Martin Scorsese.
Now, there were jawbreakers, we call them, if there was a tie. Nicole, better Jodie Foster-Mel Gibson collaboration, Maverick or The Beaver?
I have not seen The Beaver, which is horrible because how could I not see something with such a great title?
And it deals with depression.
Right.
So you're going to say Maverick?
I'm going to go with the beaver because it's about a guy with a puppet on his hand, and that's got to be better.
It's a puppet on the hand, and it's called the beaver. Yeah, that would have been the jawbreaker right there. But this was the real jawbreaker, and it's a new way to determine. I just read out the plot points, and you guys, first one to yell out the title of the movie. It's a Jodie Foster movie. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Plot points, go.
First one to go. Ready? Single parent, four-story brownstone.
Panic room.
Wow, I mean, Matt's just sitting there just shell-shocked. He doesn't even have a guess.
Do you think it's that big old Pabst Blue Ribbon there just sitting there killing his brain cells?
That's the second one.
That's all you need
there
to know about that picture, Jared Leto and cornrows.
Nicole wins this one and Sal 5-2. They wiped you up again, Matt. How about a handshake at least? Come on.
Yeah.
Courteous,
well
geez.
Done.
Yeah.
Well done.
It brings us to the end of a great cinema jaw, Matt. And we got to thank our guests first and foremost. Nicole Knepper, her book is coming out once again on April 2nd.
Yes, April 2nd.
And where can the jawheads listening to this at home find you online?
You can find me on the Chicago Now website, chicagonow.com/momswhodrinkandswear, and on Facebook on my Moms Who Drink and Swear page.
Sal, anything to plug?
No, I got nothing to pimp, but thank you.
It was
Sal
a great
wants
time
to plug something, and that is profane.
Way to go out
nice,
on a high
nice
note.
Played. I like very it nice.
Yes. We want to thank our engineer, Elias Rodriguez, the best in the biz.
Thanks, Elias.
Also to our sponsors, MoviePass. Check out MoviePass/CinemaJaw.
And we got to talk about the new 400. You
yes,
know what?
The new 400 theaters here in Chicago, located in Rogers Park.
If you're awesome
up there, my neck of the woods. It's
full
great
liquor bar.
Adult beverages. It's
yes
absolutely wonderful.
And also yep the best prices on first-run movies in all of Chicago. So check out what's playing at the new 400 at their website, thenew400.com.
Easy.
Yes. Matt, until next week, check us out on Facebook.
Follow us on Twitter.
And subscribe to us on iTunes. And also, keep on jawing about the movies.
Do it.